We are Illinois' oldest conservation organization. So we were founded in April of 1897 in Chicago on Lakeshore Drive by a small group of individuals that were very concerned at the time about birds, and in particular the use of bird feathers and hats that people were wearing. So that was really the impetus that got things started. That, of course, led to much broader conservation. But at the time, there really were no federal laws protecting birds. And so the initial effort of the society was a grassroots effort to just sort of build awareness and try and get decreased interest and a better understanding of where the feathers of the hats were coming from. And they achieved that very quickly. In fact, there's a article I found in the Chicago Tribune from just 1 year in. They were talking to a person a clerk who ran one of the stores in downtown Chicago, who said that the interest in the hats was waning, and because of the lack of demand, they were going to cease selling them.
It sounds a little like the fight over fur, wearing a fur, that came, of course, much later.
That came across much later. And so that was the initial, the grassroots effort, but then they had to build the foundation for bird protection. And so that was actually a 20-year effort, but that led to the Migratory Bird Treaty Act, which was passed in 1918. And that's the foundation for the protection of migratory birds. And they just celebrated their 100th anniversary, a big event, or lots of events around the year, last year.
So what is the state of the bird population now, not only in the U.S., but right here in Illinois? I'd read that it was a third, maybe more, of the population is threatened in some way.
So there's lots of birds that breed in Illinois, well over 200 species, and some are going up and some are going down. So trying to really get a good understanding of which ones are going up and which ones are going down is a big focus. And one of the big groups in Illinois, you know, at what we call the guild level, are grassland birds, and they've been declining quite a bit, just primarily because of changes in the landscape of Illinois and loss of grasslands. Forest birds have done a little bit better. Another group that we call shrubland birds, which would be in, you know, areas that have some grass, but early shrubs, early successional kinds of fields, they've had some trouble as well. And again, we think that's largely habitat-based. And so, like I said, you've got some that are doing okay, some that are not doing as well. And actually, some of our most common birds right now are declining at a pretty good clip right now.
What would be a couple of those?
So things like grackles and even horned lark, which used to be one of our most common birds, are still very common, but their populations are declining right now.
I'm guessing a lot of people, they put out their bird feeders, they... you know, maybe they have trees in their yard and they see birds there, they think everything is fine. You know, they may not calculate habitat loss the same way that they would with some other species out there, that they may think birds somehow literally rise above that. That's not necessarily the case, though.
Well, birds have shown that they're pretty resilient. So, you know, if they're given the chance, they can respond pretty quickly. And for these common birds that are declining, you know, there still are millions of birds. So it's really hard, I think, for the casual and even a little beyond casual observer to really notice the differences. That's where you've got to have the sort of well-designed surveys that we have that can actually sort of pinpoint that and say, okay, here's what's going on. You know, for a common bird that is declining, that doesn't necessarily mean, oh, we've got to do some conservation, you know, action, because, like I said, there's still millions of those birds. But it is trying to understand, well, what's driving that, and are there things we can do to sort of stem that? You know, the conservation efforts tend to be focused more on the really rare things that are, you know, certainly at a lot more risk.
I think a lot of people would understand what the Illinois Audubon Society is about, what the focus is. They may not understand all the things you do. Can you talk just a bit about some of the different projects that you're involved with, but also some of the other causes that you work on?
Yeah, so we've changed a lot. So as I said, you know, earlier on, we were about sort of bird protection, and we've expanded a great deal. We've been really active in protecting habitats all from shortly after we were started. So we were actually involved in some of the efforts to save the Indiana Dunes Lakeshore, the establishment of the Indiana Dunes National Lakeshore, some of the key sites, Goose Lake Prairie, I&M Canal, some of those we were involved in just helping government get in a position to protect those. Early on, the society was also really interested in prairie chickens within Illinois. And so the Prairie Chicken Foundation was a group that sort of grew out of the Illinois Audubon Society, as well as a few other conservation groups. And that's the group that really led the charge to protect the habitat for prairie chickens in the state. If it wasn't for that effort, I'm sure we wouldn't have prairie chickens right now. Through time then, in the 50s and all, we got pesticides became a big issue, and the society got real involved in that. We were pretty active trying to get DDT banned. And then much more recently, what we've been sort of shifting towards has been buying and managing sanctuaries. So we're up to just shy of 3,000 acres right now. In sanctuaries around the state, we've got some property down in Woodland, sort of in the Shawnee National, adjacent to the Shawnee National Forest, where we've got woodland birds. Coming up from there, we've got some property in the prairie chicken sanctuaries, where so we've got some areas down there where the public can come and actually see some of the grasslands and some of the birds. And then moving up here in Springfield, we've got the Adams Wildlife Sanctuary, which is just a real gem in the city of Springfield. We've got 40 acres. Trails. We've got people, especially in the spring. It's fun. Been fun to see people coming out and enjoying the spring wildfires and the birds out there. Keep going further north, up by just outside of Amboy. We've got two large properties, a 300-acre what we call the Amboy Marsh Nature Preserve, and then our newest property, the Grimmel Wildlife Sanctuary. It's a 400-acre acquisition for us. So we've been getting more and more into the land conservation game. And we do two things. Some properties we buy, and then we hold for us to manage longer term. And sometimes we help partners. So another deal that we're just wrapping up right now was a deal we did in Will County with the Joliet Park District. They've got a really nice park there called Pilcher Park. And we bought some adjoining land that had come up for sale. Park District couldn't quite move fast enough. So we came in, we partnered with the Illinois Clean Energy Foundation, got a grant for that, and then we were able to acquire it, and now we're working in the process of rolling that back out to the Joliet Park District.
We're talking with Jim Herkert. He's the executive director of the Illinois Audubon Society, and we'll talk just a moment here on the Grimmel Wildlife Sanctuary, because that is a new addition for you. But you touched on some of the other locations that that you now own. I think the one I'm most familiar with, of course, is the Adams Wildlife Sanctuary. If the Audubon Society was not involved in that, do you think that that property would still be there in its current state? Would that have been developed? And is that pretty much the what you see around the state?
Well, I think certainly a property like that in the city, there'd be a great deal of development pressure, I think. If some other group could have, it definitely would have had to have some conservation entity, I think, to have the ownership of that in order to maintain it the way it is, a block. When you look at the aerial map of Springfield, and it stands out pretty nicely. So, certainly, especially in towns, areas of that size tend to be the ones that people look at, for some sort of development.
The Grimmel Wildlife Sanctuary, now that is a name that's been attached to it because you had a very generous donor.
That's correct. So that's our newest project, and we had two great partners on that project. One was the Illinois Clean Energy Community Foundation, which is a foundation that we do a lot of partnering with. In fact, we've done 9 projects with them. But this is a legacy project of theirs. So they came in with came up with $1.6 million to go towards this purchase. But then the story that's really caught people's attention is the very generous donor that we had who came up with the match for the Illinois Clean Energy Foundation. His name's Russ Grimmel. He's been a longtime member of the Illinois Audubon Society. And a couple of years ago, he contacted us and said he had some stock that he was willing to transfer over to us. And when we got further into that detail, it turned out to be some Walgreens stock that he had bought in the early 1950s and held. And so he had a $1,000 investment in the 1950s that at the time it was transferred was valued in excess of $2 million that he very generously donated. And we provided that as match for the Illinois Clean Energy Foundation money, for the acquisition, and then we're also using a good chunk of that money as what for stewardship to ensure the long-term management of the property.
And talk about that property itself. I'm sure all of the properties you own all have some unique characteristics to them. What makes that one unique?
So this is a really nice example of it's sand ground. It's in an area that we call the Green River Lowlands. So it's got some sand savanna, some sand prairie, and some sand ponds. Only 10% of it was ever used for agriculture. So most of it's in a relatively unaltered state. We've got some problems where things like invasive species, honeysuckle and others, have come in. But you can get those out, and as long as the seed bank and some of the rest of the community is there. So it's got really high restoration potential. It also has a unique kind of wetland on site. It's called a sedge meadow. And in the late 1970s, the state did what the first state actually in the country to do. It was called the Illinois Natural Areas Inventory, which was a survey of the state to find the areas in the state that had been least disturbed, that were most characteristic and representative of what Illinois would have looked like prior to European settlement. And so in order to make it onto the Natural Areas Inventory, it's got to be a really high quality piece of property that shows very limited signs of disturbance. And the Grimmel property has a really nice Natural Areas Inventory recognized sedge meadow on it.
I heard you mention invasive species, especially plant species. Does that create a big problem for the bird population? Does it crowd out certain plants that they need to survive, at least certain species?
It'll crowd out some things. Birds are sometimes a little more tolerant than other animals are. Certainly, especially for like some of the insects, you know, there might be a real tight association between a particular species and a particular species of plants. And so that can definitely be a problem. And for the native flora, that can also be, they crowd out, they shade, they change the microclimate. So it can have big impacts for them. It can alter, one of the species I mentioned was honeysuckle, which is a shrub, goes into these sand areas, which were typically much more often. And so that for things like turtles and all that, it'll shape it. You know, for birds, it'll change it because, they might like more open areas. Once it gets crowded, shaded out, you're going to have a change in the community. But the nice thing, especially about these sand areas up by in this particular area, is that they're very resilient as well. So once you pull them out, they tend to respond to restoration and management relatively quickly. So we're really optimistic that we can turn this site into a really valuable and high-quality site.
An amazing turnaround that I think I've seen, at least in my lifetime, and actually since I've been working in radio. We used to always announce whenever somebody had spotted a bald eagle. They were that rare. Nowadays, they've really rebounded. It appears as though that's a population that's come back quite a bit. Are there any other success stories like that happening right now?
That's certainly a big one, and it's a highly visible one. There are other species that are doing, like peregrine falcon is another one that was very rare with restoration efforts and actually what we call hacking, where they would actually take young birds and put them on city ledges and get them established. They've established a stable breeding population for that bird, and that bird has also come off the endangered species list here recently. Actually, we've been a little bit involved in an effort that's going on right now for ospreys. Sort of same thing. We'll go in and we'll get birds from other states and use, again, this technique we call hacking, where you take young birds and when they're very young, you bring them to an area, you sort of raise them there, they get sort of accustomed to that, and then they come back. And so osprey populations are actually doing very well as a result of those restorations. Another one that's actually doing really well right now is barn owl. Which is a...
Not the barred owl with a D, but with the N.
But the barn owl, yep. And that's an owl that occurs in grasslands, primarily open grasslands. And as the name would imply, they nest in cavities, so frequently people would see them in barns historically. But barns aren't as common as they used to be, nor are grasslands. So there's been an effort to put out nesting boxes in some of the largest grasslands in the state, and that's proven to be very beneficial as well. That's a bird that's still rare, but the populations are increasing by a pretty good measure.
there are probably people listening who say, you know, I like what the Audubon Society is about. I'd like to support that or be part of that. But I'm not the type of person who will go out somewhere looking in the trees for them and being able to spot them. And I'm not an expert on that. They can still be involved, though.
Oh, certainly. We've got we've got 18 chapters around the state. So when you join the society, you can also become a member of one of the chapters. And that's a great place for people to get out and learn. So a lot of the chapters will host field trips or bird walks where you can go out with people. You know, the leaders of those walks know their birds really well. And the people that participate in that range from people who have really never gone out looking for birds to people who might travel all over the country looking for birds. So it's a great way to you know, learn, get introduced to it in a pretty easy way. People will help you spot birds, find them, help you identify them. And once you get the bug, it's a lot of fun, and people really enjoy that. So we've got all sorts of ways. We do some field trips. We just did a field trip last weekend. We were up at Nechusa Grasslands, had about 15 people out, got access to the area. They just introduced the bison, so the public's not generally there, so we were able to get out with the site managers and had a nice walk through the bison pasture looking at birds and giving people a chance to see both the birds, and we got great looks at the bison as well. So that was a really nice trip as well.
That's Jim Herkert. He's the executive director of the Illinois Audubon Society. Jim, thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
We'll provide a link to the Illinois Audubon Society. You can find that at our website at illinoisedition.org.